Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Leo, and I am an alcoholic. I'm currently a member of the Sunshine Group of Alcoholics Anonymous, and we meet every Sunday morning at 9 o'clock in LaPorte, Indiana. If you're ever coming through LaPorte, Indiana, come see us. Get some of that Hoosier hospitality and see what's going on. My sobriety date is April 22nd of 1989, and I am sponsored both through the steps and through the 12 traditions and the 12 concepts of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'm forever grateful to find someone that would actually intensely work with me like that. Could we please start this with a moment of silence and gratitude for the AA recoveries of the past 75 years? What I'd like to do is start off with a bang of our speakers here. And with that, I would like to give you Gail from British Columbia.
Wow. Me in San Antonio at a world international convention. Who'd have thought it? My name is Gail, and I'm an alcoholic from Victoria, British Columbia, Canada. I always say Canada when I'm at home, but I found myself down here saying, Canada? I'm from Canada? I don't know what that is. Anyway, I want to first of all thank God, Alcoholics Anonymous, my friends and family, and all of you for making it possible for me to be here today. When I opened the letter, and it took me a week to open the letter, I'd been in New Zealand for a month, and I came home to a stack of mail, and I thought, because I'm doing service work at the area level now, I thought, oh, just another something from New York, I'll open it later. So it took me a week to open it, and I almost fell on the floor when I did. I thought, oh my God, this is important. So I am truly, truly honored to be here today. My sobriety date is June 23rd, 1985. I just celebrated 25 years of sobriety. And the miracle is that I did not do that alone. I can't take any of the credit for that. God got me here, and you guys kept me here. And it's been an amazing journey. And so by way of a little bit of background, I grew up in Winnipeg, Manitoba, in a fairly dysfunctional alcoholic home. And for a long time, I thought that there was something seriously wrong with my mom and dad. And I now know with the growth and learning in Alcoholics Anonymous is they did the very best they could. They loved us the best they could. And, you know, it was a pretty rough time because my dad stopped working, gainfully employed, at about 12, and he never did work again, and he died when I was 21 as a result of this disease. And my mother, although not an alcoholic, she was addicted to my dad, so it was pretty screwy, and I just wanted to get out of there. I wanted to get away from home, so I quit school before my last year of high school, and I just left. I got on the train. I was going to go marry my boyfriend who had moved to Trail. And I got on the train to leave Winnipeg, and I thought, oh my God, there's a whole world out there that I haven't seen yet. So I leaped off the train and told him I couldn't marry him, and that was that was the beginning of my journey. I got away from that alcoholic home, I started drinking and partying. I was way underage, but, you know, we can always find somebody who will buy us booze. And from there, I met a friend, and we moved to Vancouver. And she'd never been out of this little town of Trail, and she just went completely insane in the big city of Vancouver. And I didn't like Vancouver. Vancouver was very different than Winnipeg. It was very unfriendly, and I was very lonely and very sad. And I remember finding that alcohol was the anesthetic. Alcohol was the, you know, that took the pain away. And that's when I really started realizing how good I could feel when I drank. And from there, I moved to another small town. I didn't stay in Vancouver very long. And I met a man there that was to become my husband. And he had been married and had a little boy that lived with his parents. And During the divorce proceedings, the court ordered that I marry him in order for him to get custody of his son. And, you know, I know now that I had no ability to make decisions for myself. I was a people pleaser. And so I did what the court ordered against all my better judgment. And I told myself that I would, you know, I'd give it 5 years, and if it wasn't wonderful, I'd leave. Well, you can imagine it wasn't wonderful. I played house. I played house. I pretended. And I didn't drink a lot then, but when I did, it was always insanity. And as soon as I could, I took my little girl and my stepson, and I left. It was all about me. I didn't think about them or what was good for them or what would happen. But as soon as I got out of that marriage, I started drinking with a vengeance. I was just, you know, I'd found the elixir of life. And I don't remember much of that first 6 years after I left my husband. But again, just after my daughter's seventh birthday, I made a decision to move to Victoria. Right in the middle of a school year, you know, no thought whatsoever as to what would be good for her. And we moved to Victoria, where I knew no one. I didn't have a mechanic, I didn't have a dentist, I didn't have a doctor, I didn't have anything. So I was drinking right out of control. And interest rates went up and my mortgage tripled, and here I was, a single mom on a fixed income. So I had this really good idea. I'll get a second job. I'll get a job in a bar. I was sitting at home drinking every night anyway, so I might as well be in the bar earning money. Made real sense to me. But because I'm an overachiever and try so hard, I became probably the best barmaid in the place, and I was working full-time. I had 2 full-time jobs. Sometimes I'd sit on the side of the bed, and I didn't know if I was getting up or going to work, and it was just... And I was doing all this to make payments on a house I was never in. Anyway, in this, I finally decided that I'd quit the government job. I didn't need to work for the government. It was way more fun working in the bar. And at that time, I'd also been investigated by a social worker because somebody in that government office reported me as an unfit mother. And so I just wanted out of that government. I wanted to just stay in the bar. Anyway, one day I looked up, and there he was. There was the prince, drunk in the daytime, 2 warrants for his arrest, and no job. Guess what I thought? I can help this guy. So I took him home, which, you know, just that my daughter was devastated. It was total insanity. We drank and we fought and we fought and we drank. And he never did contribute financially. And my drinking really got bad. I mean, there was one point when I joined Weight Watchers, and I was allowed 1 ounce of alcohol a day. So I'd put my 1 ounce of rye in a glass and fill it up with diet ginger ale, and then I'd sit there and watch him. 2, 3, 4, 5 drinks. You can just imagine the resentment and anger I had. And, you know, so I gave that up quickly. And then I started hiding booze in my own house. I had booze in the bathroom, booze in the laundry room, and I used to pretend that I didn't drink. So bad about you. You know, you have to drink and I don't. Insanity. Booze hidden in my own house. Anyway, you know, it was total insanity that time with him. It didn't work. It just didn't work. So I saw a little ad in the newspaper for Al-Anon, and I thought, I'll try it. And you know, somebody in Al-Anon gave me a big book, and somebody in Al-Anon took me to a couple of open AA meetings. So for the next 2 years, I read that book, spilled wine on it, cried, and I saw everybody in that book but me. I saw my dad. I saw my friends, I saw the guy that I lived with, I saw everybody but me. It took me 2 years to see me. And by then I'd started drinking in the morning on weekends. I didn't lose my job, I didn't lose my house, I never got an impaired driving charge. But I used to show up for work reeking of alcohol and explaining, you know, that I'd had friends drop in last minute. Sorry, you know, they wanted to party. It was their fault. But the really sad thing about that was that I was drinking alone. I was alone. I was ashamed. I was humiliated. And It had to come to an end. And I think, you know, that it took 2 years for that planted seed to germinate. And my God of my understanding, I finally picked up the phone. I picked up the phone for me. And the woman who answered the phone early on a Monday morning gave me her home address and her home phone number. She said she had never done that before or since. And told me to come to her house as soon as she only lived a block away. As soon as I finished work, and I did, I was there. And I remember walking in to her house. And I was thinking, oh, God, Gail, what have you done now? You're going to join AA? Are you nuts? It'll be over. It'll be over. It'll all be over. What are you doing? Anyway, I knocked on her door, and she opened the door, and the sun was shining through the window, and she had blonde hair. And the sun was shining through her hair, and it looked like a halo. And she said to me, how are you, dear? And I said, I'm fine, thank you. Yeah, she said, smiling and laughing on the outside, crying and dying on the inside. And I thought, how does she know that? And I did start to cry. And we went to a meeting. And that was just over 25 years ago, thank God. So, I'd like to tell you that was it. I got the program, I stayed sober, and life was wonderful. I worked really hard in Alcoholics Anonymous for the first few years. I joined a home group, and I got involved. I made coffee. I even chaired a rally in 1994. And had lots of friends and lots of involvement. But I met another man in Alcoholics Anonymous, and he and I decided to start a business together. So we worked 17 hours a day, 7 days a week, for 4 years, getting that business off the ground. And I have many people in Alcoholics Anonymous to thank for coming around and, you know, supporting us when we were on our business-building mission. And then I was able to hire a manager for that business and move away somewhat. And Bob and I went our separate ways. Personally, we're still great friends and good business partners. And I got involved in Alcoholics Anonymous again. I started going to the morning meeting every day. Every day I was there. But I didn't practice the program. I simply went to meetings every day and drank coffee and soon developed tremendous resentments about all these people that I went to meetings with. So I left with the thought that I would find another group, get a sponsor, and do all that stuff, but I didn't. I got really busy in other ways. I was on boards of directors. I was just a really successful businesswoman who didn't drink. And, you know, it was not good. But again, my God of my understanding, is so good to me. He put another prince in my life. I met a man who drank alcoholically. He was charming. I had no desire to change him. I just thought, I can do this. This is fun. This will be fun. We'd been dating for about a year when we went on a road trip to Las Vegas. My brother's son was getting married, and we drove down. And my brother wasn't coming back with us, so there were just the two of us. We had to be back in Victoria by Tuesday, and so we left. We left Las Vegas on Monday morning really early. And when we stopped for lunch, my new prince had a couple of beer. So he couldn't help drive. I had to drive myself. Now, if I had the tools of the program then, I would have said, we're getting a room. But no, I drove 23 hours through the mountains of Oregon in the middle of the night with my foot to the floor in the pouring rain, screaming like a banshee. I was so angry. I was so just, the rage was back. The rage that I knew before Alcoholics Anonymous was back, and I hadn't had a drink. I was nuttier and crazier and angrier than I'd ever been drinking. So as I sat at the ferry slip in Port Angeles, I said to myself, Gail, you've got to get back to Alcoholics Anonymous. I have to. I'd been away just over 2 years. And once again, I was really, really scared. So when I got home, I phoned a woman I knew in the program and asked her to go to a meeting with me. And we went that night, and I joined that group. She also had to haul two cardboard boxes full of alcohol out of my house. I didn't drink. And I'm so grateful, so very, very grateful that I got back here before I did take a drink. And I know that God was with me the whole time, looking after me and keeping me safe from myself. I immediately signed up. The topic of this panel is intensive work with other alcoholics. And that's what I knew I had to do. I immediately signed up as a volunteer at Central Office. I answer the phones 2 days a week. I became the secretary for our 5 districts meeting. And after that, I became a GSR and then a DCM. And last year, halfway through my tenure as a DCM, the position of treasurer for Area 79 came up, and I let my name stand, and I was elected. And it's taken me right out of my comfort zone. However, service work is very, very exciting and rewarding. And as it says on page 89 of the Big Book, practical experience shows that nothing will so much ensure immunity from drinking as intensive work with other alcoholics. It works when other activities fail. So I came back to Alcoholics Anonymous just over 7 years ago, and I came back with the desperation of a newcomer. I was willing to do whatever it was I had to do to get well again. I wanted what you had. I work the steps now to the best of my ability. I've been through 3 step study groups, 2 big book study groups. I do all that I can to give back all that was so freely given to me twice. I try to live the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I have to tell you that one of the most exciting events in my life has been my brother Chuck's sobriety. My brother and I share the program today, and I'm so proud to be his sister, his friend, and his sponsor. I don't even want to think about what life would be like if I were still at home pretending to be a successful businesswoman who just didn't drink. God has been so good to me. I'm blessed with a wonderful daughter and 3 amazing grandchildren. I have friends in Alcoholics Anonymous in Victoria and everywhere I go. I even have friends in Alcoholics Anonymous in New Zealand, and I've met some of them here this weekend. I am confident that with God, the support of Alcoholics Anonymous, and the people in it, one day at a time, my life will get better. One of the most powerful tools in my AA toolkit is from step 11 on page 98 of the 12 and 12. That there is a direct linkage among self-examination, meditation, and prayer. Taken separately, these practices can bring much relief and benefit. But when they are logically related and interwoven, they result in an unshakable foundation for life. And I want that unshakable foundation. I like to think of Alcoholics Anonymous today as a lifeboat, and I don't want to be anywhere near the edge. I want to be right in the middle. With the commitment I have to Alcoholics Anonymous today, I'd have to make a whole bunch of phone calls. I'd have to fire some sponsees. I'd have to get rid of my service sponsor, my sponsor, and most of my friends. And it's just too much work, so I'm going to stay in the middle. When I left Alcoholics Anonymous in early 2000, I just walked away. I had no commitments whatsoever, none. None. I didn't even have to resign a position. I just walked out one day and never went back. And I'd like to end with, when I first came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I heard a man say that he knew absolutely what would happen if he picked up a drink. He could write the script. He knew. He knew without a shadow of a doubt what would happen. But if he didn't drink, if he didn't pick up a drink, he had no idea what would happen. And what an exciting way to live. And I've hung on to that for all these years. Even with all my waffling around and wandering around on the road, I don't think I ever forgot that. And I thank God every day that I got back here relatively unscathed. And I'm absolutely thrilled to be here. It's an opportunity of a lifetime. My friend Barb traveled with me. And we travel so well and have so much fun. And my brother as well. There's a whole bunch of other people in this room that I love to bits. But I've got to say, having Barb and my brother with me, it's just the icing on the cake. And I'm thrilled to have been here. And thank you so much for listening.
How about that, huh? All right. All right, man, this is absolutely fantastic. I think my face hurts. I haven't been able to stop grinning for about 2 days. So that's good stuff. Next speaker will be Lynn from Florida.
Good afternoon. My name is Lynn. I'm an alcoholic. I'm a member of the Southernmost Group in Key West, Florida. My sobriety date, actually I have an anniversary this month. On the 30th of the month, I'll have 29 years. I came in 1981. And just to make it real simple, I was born August 26, 1935, so I'm going to be 75 this summer. And I started drinking when I was 12 years old. I drank alcoholically from the very first beer given by the mother of a well-meaning friend. And I got sober when I was 46 years old. So that makes 34 years of drinking and the last 15 of drugging, for those of you who want to do the calculations. We're talking about working intensive work with the other alcoholic. And all I really can share on that is my own personal experience, strength, and hope. What it was like, what happened, what it's like now, what I do. I've always been a very private person, so most of my work has been concentrated one-on-one with other alcoholics, rather than in business meetings and in organized activities of AA. Alcohol affected, I came from a really, really very normal family. Intelligent, happy, loving mother and father, a really wonderful sister who passed a few years ago. We were extremely close. I liked all of my relatives. I didn't have any alcoholic relatives. Somehow or other, the cuckoo dropped an egg. Yeah. And they got this absolute madman in the family. And God knows where it came from. And I was never treated in any way other than lovingly and kindly by my friends. I went to good schools. It was entirely me and alcohol. By the time I was 14, I was making jungle juice. We all know what jungle juice is, right? Especially if you come from upper middle class or upper class family. You go in the liquor cabinet, take 1 ounce out of every bottle, put it in an empty fifth or quart bottle, and go off in the woods with a buddy and drink it. We were doing that at 14. By 15, I had a phony ID. I was going to bars. I lived in, grew up in New York, outside New York City. Not that my life was normal. My hobby was high explosives, and I made Molotov cocktails and all sorts of other bombs, spent a couple of weeks in the hospital, got badly burned, still have shrapnel in my legs. Just a normal 15-year-old war games in the woods. My parents were really good with me, and as long as I was first in every class, in every subject, I never had a question asked. I had a Ford Fellowship to go to Yale when I was 15 years old, and I turned it down. My argument was that I needed more time for my social development, meaning I thought Yale would interfere with my drinking. I did graduate from high school at 18. I went to Yale. It was the only college I ever applied to. I was going on a tour. I went up there. Saw a friend, a drinking buddy from school. He said, let's get drunk. We spent the entire weekend drinking, except Saturday night. He said, we're going to a party where there's some girls. I came back Monday, and I said, my God, that's a wonderful school. That is a wonderful school. I'm going to apply there. I never applied anyplace else. I got in, went. Alcohol was already affecting me. I'd do dean's list one semester, probation the second semester. Dean's list one semester. The thing was, if I was on probation, I had to go to every class. If I were on dean's list, I didn't have to go to class at all. Eventually, I got thrown out, joined the Army in the Korean War. Had a crazy time of it, managed to stay in the States, came back, went to grad school, took 5 years in South Asia, ran a money laundering and black market currency operation for a while, taught English, you know, usual stuff that normal people would do. I never ran into drugs. They weren't there in the 40s. They weren't there in the 50s. Late 50s, early 60s, South Asia, I ran into opium and hashish. But I really didn't. I got back to New York in the fall of 62, and the 60s were really something. You know, I'm almost asking everybody here who got through the 60s alive to hold up their hand, but I'm afraid there's so many missing. The pill had hit. Women weren't wearing underwear. God was good. Dope was everywhere. And I had a fellowship to go to Columbia grad, somehow having purloined an honorary bachelor's degree from Yale. That's a long story. I have the only one they ever gave. And worked at grad school for a while and then got recruited to go to work on Wall Street, went to work for J.P. Morgan. Became an officer, still drank like a fish, was in trouble all the time. But I was surrounded by enablers, lots of money, rich family, powerful connections. No problems. No DUIs, no nothing. And in 67, I was running a software company, taking part-time at the Morgan. And I came down to Key West, Florida, and fell in love with sunshine, alcohol, and drugs. It was wonderful. It was crazy. I bought a bar on the waterfront. It seemed entirely logical. It was a shrimper's bar. We had upstairs rooms rented to hookers, providing they would bring their tricks down and get them to drink in the bar. We sold alcohol across the bar. I had a very large ex-Marine who had two tours in NAM as my bartender. He'd come in every morning, put something on the jukebox, stick a Bowie knife in the bar, look around and say, "Anybody want anything?" Then we sold reefer across the bar and smuggled coke on the side. So that went on for about 15 years. Yeah. And I put a lot of money into real estate, and I made a lot of money. Eventually, I didn't have to work. I just hired someone to do it. And I got drunker and drunker and drunker. And then it started. My people who were working for me hired a guy named Pete, who had 3 years in the program, and his job was to 12-step me. That would have been in the beginning of 81. I was just too crazy. I was falling asleep on the floor of the office. One time I fell asleep on the floor of the office and woke up with a pair of bikini-laced ladies' panties in my hand and not the faintest idea what happened. And they couldn't fire me because I owned the company, and they all worked for me, so they went around. And Pete started to talk to me about AA. He gave me AA literature. This is where intensive working with others came. He tried the thing in the big book. Well, maybe you don't have a problem. Maybe you could stop. Oh, yes, I can stop for a year. Sure. Oh, maybe you can stop for a month. Oh, sure. Maybe you could stop for a week. Oh, sure. I had read all the AA literature. I was happy to have taken a PhD level exam in it. Could I stop drinking? No. Could I stop using coke? No. Did I have to use reefer to get down after I'd done both? Yes. Did I ever have a sober day for 15 years? No. Did I bribe and cheat my way out of all kinds of trouble? Yes. Finally, I woke up one time in Mexico in rather sordid circumstances and was taking a sailboat back with a couple. And the woman on the boat had 11 years in the program, broke her anonymity and talked to me for 2 days, 48 hours. I came back and Pete said, "Can you stop for 1 day?" I said, "Yeah." I lasted 90 minutes. Kenny, one of the guys who was running the Copian from Miami, came in. He said, "Oh, that's this Peruvian. It's just killer. You've got to try a line." So 90 minutes later, I was in the chart room drunk. And I went with the Thursday. I woke up on Friday, and I was hungover and miserable. And I said, "Pete, I cannot do this on my own." He said, "Well, let's go to a meeting." I mean, I'd known there were AA meetings in Key West. We only had about 14, 15 people in the program then. Now we've got 400 or 500, about 100 of whom are pretty active. And so I went to an AA meeting, and it was a speaker meeting, and the speaker was a guy who used to work in my bar, a shrimper who'd been to prison numerous times. We used to joke. He still gives me my anniversary medallions. He's got 9 plus 29. He'll be 38 in November. And identified, you know, we used to say, "I went to Yale, he went to jail." It really happened. And I took a white chip. And I've not had alcohol or drugs since that night. Through the grace of God and this fellowship and through intensive work with other alcoholics. Roy worked with me. Pete, the guy that 12-stepped me, worked with me. We didn't have a rehab. We didn't have the court system sending people to the program. We didn't have a drying out facility. You got sober in the room. There were probably 12 or 13 old-timers and 3 or 4 newcomers. That was how it worked. And they took over your life and told you exactly what to do. You know, forget the suggestion stuff. It was you will. I was sponsoring myself, trying to decide whom it would be, who would be worthy. And finally, this guy, California Sam, God bless him. Sam, if you're in this convention, I want you to, he'd have 51 years this year, and I haven't seen him for 20 some years. And I've been looking for him. I put a note up. They drew lots. I had so much anger. One of my current sponsor was in the program then. She said, "It wasn't anger, it was rage, and you scared everybody." And Sam said, "Well, he needs sponsoring, so I'll sponsor him." So this chubby guy came up to me after a meeting. He said, "God, you know, I really appreciated everything you said. It was really, really smart." He said, "I do think you might need a sponsor, and I'm going to be your temporary sponsor until you can find someone else." He said, "I have to ask you, intensive work with other alcoholics, do you want to stay sober?" And I said, "Yes, I really do." He said, "Here's the big question. Will you go to any length to stay sober?" I said, "Yes, I will." And in my heart, I meant it. I really meant it. He said, "Good. Come to my place at 2:30 tomorrow afternoon. We're going to start the steps." I had like 6 weeks. And he said, "Don't worry about it." He said, "My sponsor was the first Native American in Alcoholics Anonymous back in the 1930s in Akron. And in Akron in the 1930s, you started the steps the day you came in. We can't do it tonight because it's too late, but you can come at 2:30 tomorrow afternoon." And then started all the changes in my life. I showed up at 2:30. He said, "Did you follow all the traffic laws coming here?" This was Key West. I never followed traffic laws. Not in Monroe County. We were paying off too many people. I said, no. He said, I want you to get in your car, go back to your house, and I want you to come back, and this time you obey the traffic laws, you stop the lights, you follow turn signals, you stop at stop signs, you don't speed. I asked the first of many times, I said, what does this have to do with Alcoholics Anonymous? He said, are you willing to go to any length to stay sober? I said, yeah, I am. He said, well, that's what you have to do. So I thought, okay. I got in my car, drove back to my house, I came back, and we started on the steps. We did the steps in 5 days, meaning that I understood the basic principles. Then we spent 4 more years, 2 hours a day, going back over these basic principles and applying them. Now, some other things, people say, oh, I'd never do that. Let's see. I couldn't show up unshaven, and I had to have a haircut. My place had to be cleaned, including under the bed, where it was suggested I look every morning. I had to get a chocolate ice cream soda, chocolate, a large one, at 4:30 every afternoon. And if I didn't feel sort of blah afterwards, I had to have a second. Why? Years later, I figured out he was hydrating me and pumping my blood sugar just before the time I'd go into a bar. I mean, not that I didn't go into the bar at 6 o'clock in the morning for the breakfast hour and have vodka and grapefruit juice. But, I mean, the first time when I really was drinking. He suggested, don't drink or use drugs. Well, that was easy enough. Don't associate with anyone who uses alcohol or drugs. I didn't know anybody who didn't, you know. I came back at one point, I said, this is boring. And he just looked at me. He said, boring is good. I'm in pain. Pain is good. We got to fourth step, lust. No sex. He mentioned, I'm sure you all know, the three M's, the first year in the program. Meetings and meditation are the first two. He said, I'm not sure I can trust you with the third. I said, oh my God, is this all there is to life? Just going to these stupid meetings with these boring people? He looked at me, he said, yes. Isn't it wonderful? So I got very little sympathy and one hell of a lot of direction. I was going to do something. I wasn't allowed to cross the 106-mile marker. Key West is 126 miles in a straight line from Miami, and every mile is marked with a mile marker. Mile marker 106 is Jewfish Creek. It marks the end of the county. I couldn't cross it without him. I was filled with rage and anger. I had to pick a different meeting every day because no doubt it was the people in the meeting, not me. And if I finished that meeting and there was time, I would come back. I was told I had rabid squirrels living inside my head and I shouldn't listen to them. I could not control my thoughts. I could not control my feelings. The only possible thing that we could control was my action, 1 hour, 1 minute, 1 day at a time, and it was action on which we worked. He used to say, God bless him, he used to say, physical discipline comes before spiritual discipline. Do what you are asked to do, and the rest will follow. He asked me if I had been honest. I came under greed. I said, no. I'd never been honest with anybody. said, well, it's time to start, and you're going to begin with your tax return. I said, I file a tax return. He said, do you file an honest tax return? I said, oh, my God, no. I've never filed an honest tax return in my life. He said, change accountants and file an honest return. Well, you know what happened. Of course, I filed an honest return. I got audited. They wanted a lot of money, and I had to give it to them. But at least after that, you know, I just give the guy all my documents and say, file an honest return. Don't take anything that's questionable. I don't want to talk to them. I bless the man. Everything I've learned about working with others came through the harsh first 4 years with him. 2020 Club. Everybody know that. I talked to a lady today from Guelph, Ontario, who actually knew what it was. You show up 20 minutes early. You sit up front, always in the front row, as near the speaker as possible. And you stay 20 minutes afterwards in case someone wants to talk to you. You make a meeting every day. I haven't matched a friend of mine, Fireman Bob in Key West. He's on his 118th 90 in 90. I mean that seriously. But I have made a meeting every day I possibly could. It is my intention to make a meeting. I'm going to be in Victoria at the end of August. I will look for you. Be there. I sponsored a lot of people. I have five more minutes? Three more? Three? Okay. I've never been able to predict who the hell is going to stay sober. I ask for actions. The one guy in 29 years that I would have sworn never, ever, ever would make it, I sponsored him in 85, 86. He was drunk and stoned and bringing drugs to meetings. His girlfriend, this was up in the hills in western North Carolina, his girlfriend was pregnant. Her family was looking for him with shotguns to kill him. His dope dealer hadn't been paid. His life was a mess. And he was sitting drunk and stoned in AA meetings asking me what to do. And I couldn't really think what to say. I said, Bob, you know, go to a meeting. And he'd come in with some problem, and I'd say, Bob, go to a meeting. 15 years later, I was in the Home Depot in Asheville, and I heard, Lynn, Lynn! And there's this guy, bib overalls, giant beard, kids like this, trailing after him. He said, it's me, Bob, don't you remember? I tell everybody you're the best sponsor everybody ever, anyone ever had. He said, no matter what problem I came to you with, you'd say, go to a meeting. He said, I want to show you. He took me out. There was a big truck, you know, construction company and all that. He'd done it. One last thing for 30 seconds. The toughest thing I see in the program today, and I'm not going to take a stand on it, is the overpowering influx of newcomers from the courts into our rooms in relation to the number of old-timers who were there to work with them. I would like to tell you that after 29 years, I know exactly what we do, but I haven't a clue. I just try to do the best I can, and I ask exactly the same question that Sam asked me. Are you willing to go to any length to stay sober? And if they are, I sponsor them. I give them a phone number. I tell them to call me every day and meet me at a meeting every day. If you don't call or I don't see you, I'm not your sponsor. You go find someone else for about the first 90 days. I did have one guy text me, I hereby resign from AA. So it's been a wonderful ride. I owe everything I have now to the people in the program, my dear friends in the program, sponsees, people who helped me, my own sponsor, all of my friends who are here, and I thank you very much for this opportunity.
Hubba hubba, how about that, huh? Man, is your crowd leaving us, Lynn, or what? I feel like a book of the Bible watching this Exodus here. Anyway, that's what I figured. They're not the ones that resigned, are they? Holy moly. Anyway, good stuff. Thank you, Lynn. Thank you, Gail. And with that, bringing up the rear, least but last but not least, is Jeremy from Oklahoma, who I hear is a real hot dog.
My name's Jeremy. I'm an alcoholic. And I'm a member of the Tulsa Big Book Group in Oklahoma. If you're over there on a Tuesday or a Friday, we meet at 7:30 on Tuesday and 8 o'clock on Friday. We would love to have you. We show up about an hour early. My home group is up here in the front row. If you don't get to our home group about an hour early, you don't get in the first two or three rows. It's a fight to get in the first row at our home group, and I love our home group. We're a very active home group. We believe in service work at all levels. We usually have 2 to 3 carloads attend our area assemblies and district meetings. We show up to all the facilities in Tulsa as far as hospitals and institutions that will allow us in on a weekly or at least a monthly basis. And I'm very proud of our home group for doing that. We believe in intensive work with other alcoholics. I don't know if this is a curse or a blessing. Our area delegate is a member of our home group and a friend of mine, and that's partially why I'm standing here today. He told me there'd be about 125 to 200 people at the workshops. He said, so it won't be much different than speaking at your home group. He was a little off. But that's okay. I called my sponsor a little bit ago. He wasn't able to make it, and he said he'd be saying a prayer about 3:30, and my home group did the same for me, so we're okay, I guess. But, I'm always ecstatic to do anything for Alcoholics Anonymous. Speaking is not one of the things I enjoy doing the most because it's uncomfortable. My life was extremely painful and much more than uncomfortable before I found Alcoholics Anonymous. So if doing something like this is one of the things I'm willing to say yes to, then that's perfectly okay today. And, we got letters inviting us. My wife got a letter inviting her to chair one of these, and we were so ecstatic, when we opened those letters and we both ran into each other. Oh, my God, look at this. And then the fear set in. Because then my mind goes, well, maybe there's something that you can get out of this. Maybe you don't. But anyway, so I show up because that's what I was taught to do. And, much like everyone else, I started drinking at an early age. And like our book talks about, I had some friends just walked in the room. Where was I? When I put alcohol into my system, I know when the book talks about the sense of ease and comfort. I know exactly what the book's talking about. And that's what I experienced at a very young age, in sixth grade or whatever, however old I was the first time I got enough alcohol into my system to feel the effect produced by alcohol. And it relieved all those fears and anxieties and that feeling of separation that I always seemed to have in me. It removed all that stuff almost at once. It was like a breath of fresh air. And it was like the first time I had ever felt okay. And I'll jump forward really quick. Alcohol consumed my life almost immediately. And by the time I was 14 years old, I was an almost daily drinker. If there was any way for me to drink on a daily basis, I was doing so. And I spent most of my time figuring out ways to do that. So by the time I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, several years later, I was dying of alcoholism. I was dying of an illness that I had no understanding of. And those last 4 years of my drinking were excruciating. And I had been by the time I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, I should rephrase that. By the time Alcoholics Anonymous came to me, because the men that introduced me to Alcoholics Anonymous carried the message to drunks. And that's what they did to me, and they carried the message of Alcoholics Anonymous into a detox center. And by the time that happened, I had been suicidal for a number of years. I had been going through seizures every time I'd go a day and a half without drinking. I'd go into convulsions, and that went on for several years. And I had been talking about how I needed to check myself into somewhere because I knew that. Well, I knew that there was a bad problem, and I had been talking about it for months, and I had been lying about it, saying that I had been calling all these places in Tulsa, and no one would let me in, but the truth is I never even opened a phone book, because I couldn't imagine life without alcohol. And one day, not much different than any other day, I was sitting around completely miserable, thinking of a way to take the pain away, and alcohol that morning was not seeming to do it. And I finally opened up a phone book, like I said I'd been doing for the last couple of months, and I called a detox center. Because I had never been to Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't know anyone that was in Alcoholics Anonymous. I had heard of it, but I didn't really even know what an alcoholic was. I just knew that for the last 4 years or so, I was trying on an almost daily basis to stop drinking. And no matter how great the wish or the necessity or the need, I could not seem to do it. And I just always drank again. And so I end up in this detox center, and I'm miserable. And today I'm a pretty outgoing and friendly guy most of the time. And that's not the case before I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. I was in a lot of pain, and I didn't know any way to express the way I felt except by anger and lashing out at people. And so I did not smile. I didn't really talk to people by the time I checked into that detox center. And anyway, it was the second day I was in there, and they rounded us up for a meeting, and they took us into this little room, and in walked these guys, and they were there were seven guys, and they were extremely happy. Very loud. They walking around shaking everyone's hands. I wanted absolutely no part of these guys. And I sat there with my arms folded, and they sat down and opened a meeting, and they promptly asked me to read something. It was How It Works. And I read How It Works, and then I started listening to these guys share, I'm so grateful. What I know today is that there was one guy sponsoring the other six. He had those guys go up to that detox center. With him. To share their experience. Most of them hadn't been sober very long at all. They were very new in sobriety and very new into the steps. But he thought it very important that they share their experience. And so they came in and they started talking about what happened to them, and they started talking about how no matter what, they had a mind that always led them back to drinking. And I knew, I was, man, that's me. That's me. No matter what, I always drink. And they start talking about that once they put alcohol into their system, something happens to them that makes it virtually impossible for them to stop or to moderate. And I thought, man, that's me. It happens to me every time. It's been happening to me since I was a young teenager. Every time I put alcohol into my system, I can't seem to stop. And they talked about how if I be one of these people that this book was talking about, that, you know, I'm beyond human aid. And you know, for some reason, in a one-hour meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, by listening to these guys share their experience, strength, and hope, I knew beyond a shadow of a doubt that I was an alcoholic. I knew. I had been experiencing it for years. I tried over and over and over again to stop drinking, and I failed repeatedly. And when they talked about this this phenomenon of craving that occurs once I put alcohol into my system, I knew 100% that was me. And, in a one-hour meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, something started to click in my life. Something started to change. And by the way these guys came in and the way they carried themselves and the happiness they were showing, I knew that they were not feeling the way I was feeling. But from the experience they shared, I believe that they used to. And they also started talking about, you know, by doing a few simple things, this obsession that they suffered and battled with for years just seemed to be lifted. They just didn't have it anymore. And I thought, you know what? I got nothing to lose. You know, my life was going downhill fast and probably couldn't go much farther. And you know, like I said, I was suicidal. And I really didn't want to die. I didn't know any way out of the pain I had been experiencing for so many years. So, you know, I absolutely believe these guys. And I absolutely believe that whatever it was they were doing completely changed their lives. And I thought, you know what? I'll do it. I'll do this. And, I mean, it can't get any worse. And that was my mindset when I left that one-hour meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I walked into that meeting with my arms folded and my little chest puffed out. And I was extremely angry at the world. And I left that meeting sobbing like a baby. Because I knew that my life was about to change. And, you know, that night, one of those guys, he told me to go back to my room and hit my knees and ask... just ask for help. He didn't say specifically what it was I was asking or anything like that. He said, just hit your knees and say, help me. And that's exactly what I did. You know, and I went to sleep that night, and I slept better than I had slept in years. I got up that next day, and I turned into the guy that everyone in the detox center hated. I was the guy that chaired every meeting and walked around smiling and was happy. You know, because what happened to me that night is I knew beyond a shadow of a doubt that I was powerless over alcohol. And, you know, and it was not hard for me to see that my life was unmanageable. And I believed through these guys' experience that there was something out there that would help me. I believed it. And I made a decision that night that I was going to do something different. I was going to take different action. That's how it started for me. I decided to take some different action. And by hitting my knees that night, I did that outwardly. And I got up the next morning, and I knew immediately that something began to change in my life. I got out of that detox center, and I did exactly what they said to do. I went to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And what happened was, is I kept running into that guy who carried that meeting in there. And for the next week, I went to a meeting every day, and I was going to two most days. And I saw him at every meeting I went to. And I just picked meetings randomly out of a book. I wouldn't, you know, no one told me to go there. So I asked that guy to be my sponsor. That guy was active as anyone I had ever known in Alcoholics Anonymous. He was all over the place. I got a home group, and him and I started working the steps immediately. We started going through the book Alcoholics Anonymous. And you know, my life changed quickly and dramatically. He believed in work with other alcoholics and not just through step work. He believed in giving of ourselves so that others may benefit. And he would call me repeatedly with things like, "What are you doing?" And I said, "Nothing." And he goes, "So-and-so needs help moving. You don't know her, but here's her number. Give her a call. I told her if you were free, you'd be willing to help." And I said, "Okay." You know, I didn't know how that had to do anything with Alcoholics Anonymous, but I know today that when I'm helping other people, I'm not thinking of myself. So that's what I did. And within a few weeks, I think it was about 5 weeks, it was on Thanksgiving. By the way, I got sober in October of 2000. In November of 2000, he had me up at the same hospital that I had just got out of detox. And he had me carrying the message of Alcoholics Anonymous into the patients that were sitting on the other side. And you know, I've never felt so grateful in my life as to do things like that. So, you know, I trucked along in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I'm very glad to say that from my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous till today, I have not had to have a drink. I'm also here to say that I have been absolutely involved in Alcoholics Anonymous from that day to this. Because although things began to happen for me almost immediately, and I felt an overwhelming change begin to take place in my life, I know that that experience I had from the very beginning would not get me through from that day to this without action. And our book talks about that repeatedly. You know, when I got asked to do this, I sat down with my book, and I was going to go through, and I started post-it notes everywhere, and I was going to pick out everywhere that our book Alcoholics Anonymous talks about working with another alcoholic, and I was going to have page numbers for you guys, and I was going to be so impressive. And I thought, you know, every time I'm sitting out there, none of that means crap to me. The only thing that's ever meant anything is when someone gets up here and shares their experience. So after about 4 days of doing that, in my morning readings, I set all that aside and I said, you know what, I'll say a prayer and I'll get up there and I'll share my experience. And what has happened from that day to this is that, I have been completely in love with Alcoholics Anonymous. I will share real quick, just in case I forget. That man that carried that meeting into me that night, he was my sponsor for the first 3 years. And after about 3 years, I got another sponsor. And the reason why is because that man, he helped a lot of people for a lot of years. And there's people sitting in this room tonight that he had a big part of them getting sober. And that man was very involved in Alcoholics Anonymous for a long time. And what happened is he was still helping people, but he was doing it in other avenues. And what happened is he opened sober living homes. And his focus fell from Alcoholics Anonymous, and his focus fell on those sober living homes. And after years of sponsoring men and being a home group member, he started to slide in those areas, and he stopped sponsoring people. I don't think he was unwilling to do that, but he wasn't there enough to where people asked him to sponsor him anymore. And he didn't have a home group anymore. And Alcoholics Anonymous kind of got put on the back burner, and these sober living houses took the forefront. And what ended up happening to him, like I know will happen to me if I'm not focused on helping other drunks through Alcoholics Anonymous, is that after 13 or 14 years of sobriety, he drank again. And he was already suffering from hepatitis C, and within a few short years, he died. And that was last year. We buried my first sponsor in 2009. It's a harsh reminder that no matter how long I've been doing this, I must stay on the firing lines of Alcoholics Anonymous, because I know that I have the mind that the book talks about that will eventually always tell me that this time it'll be different. And what I've experienced, that if I'm sitting in front of another drunk talking and sharing my experience, my mind doesn't say that. So that's what I try to do. For years in Alcoholics Anonymous, that's all I did, was go to meetings and go to detox centers and anywhere I got asked to go, saying yes and showing up and picking people up. I really don't know how many meetings I went to in those first couple of years of sobriety without someone else in my vehicle. And especially for that first year, year and a half, I picked up one guy for a year and a half every morning. We went to a 7 a.m. meeting. And I took him to work afterwards, and I went home and slept because I worked nights. And I never thought twice about doing it. And then gradually over a period of time, when life got really good, I never backed off of Alcoholics Anonymous, but I think my participation in Alcoholics Anonymous just changed a little bit. I've always been a committed member of a home group, and I believe in being there when the doors are open, unless I'm at something like this. But I went back to school, and my focus, I don't even think my focus shifted, but more time was dedicated to school, and less time was dedicated to Alcoholics Anonymous. And even though I planned school around my home group nights, that was the only thing I was doing, was going to my home group and going to school. I have a wife that's very active in Alcoholics Anonymous, and by this time she was very involved in the service structure, and I'm so glad that I'm a member of a home group that is absolutely active and carries the message to other alcoholics and keeps me wanting to do these things, because, you know, every time I get the opportunity to through school semesters and things, that's exactly what I do. And I started sponsoring men when I was fairly early in sobriety, and I still do that today. A couple of those guys are sitting in the front row today. I love Alcoholics Anonymous. And I know where I was before I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, and that I sat home with a gun in my mouth on a regular basis. And since I came into Alcoholics Anonymous and got absolutely involved and put myself in front of other drunks, my mind has completely changed. And not only do I not think about drinking, but I haven't thought of suicide or anything like that since I came in here. And the only thing I can contribute to that is that through working the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, I've been able to affect this contact with a power that has not only allowed me to not obsess about drinking alcohol, but it's allowed me to become active and enjoy life again. He was talking about earlier about, am I just going to be bored? Boring is so far from my life today. Sometimes I want to find some time to be bored. I really do. But I don't have it. I don't have time to be bored. Because if I'm not doing things like this, I'm with people in Alcoholics Anonymous. Our life revolves around it, and I believe it has to for me. Because I know that if I'm not If I'm not sharing with you and you're not sharing with me and I'm not focused on Alcoholics Anonymous and recovery from alcoholism, that I have the mind that the book talks about, and I'll drink again. And I know I can't afford that today. I don't know if I can sober up again. You know, I believe that I was on the brink of death, and the book talks about, we grab a hold with all the fervor of a drowning man, and that's what I've done. And since October 16th of 2000 to this day, I've been absolutely involved in Alcoholics Anonymous as my life will allow me to be. And I'll tell you that I never could have imagined having the life I have today, having the friends I have today, being able to be in a meeting in San Antonio, Texas, standing in front of loved ones, telling how a program can pull someone like me from the brink of death to a life of joy. And so I don't believe that the book is wrong in any place where it talks about how working with another alcoholic will save the day, you know, and it'll get us through those trials and low spots in life. I believe that, you know, and I've experienced that. And I need to remember that no matter how long I've been sober, it's exactly that's going to continue to save and make my life better. It's not sitting around at home thinking about how good my life is. It's getting out there and putting myself in front of drunks and sharing my experience with them. So more than anything, I want to thank you guys for sharing with me and allowing people to carry the message of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I want to beg of you to continue to do that. I know that as long as I do that, my life is better than I could have ever imagined. As long as I sit home thinking about how I should be doing that, my life kind of tends to suck. So I'm very glad to be sober. Thank you.